Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode, on Thursday, April 30th, 2026, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Dems say AZ is primed to flip blue, plan to pour resources into legislative races. It is not a six-year-old's responsibility. Democrats blast GOP's school gun safety bill. Mesa can't enforce its own fire codes at an ICE facility where detainees can't even sit down. Why did a Democratic majority board appoint a Freedom Caucus lawmaker as county recorder? And let's get started. Our first story, Dems say AZ is primed to flip blue, plan to pour resources into legislative races, by Jared McDonald Evoy, April 28, 2026. National Democrats are once again eyeing Arizona's state legislature, aiming to flip both chambers as part of a larger national push to capitalize on President Donald Trump's historic unpopularity. To that end, they say they plan to use their sizable war chest to boost Democratic chances in 15 races this year. The Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee said it will invest in 10 House candidates across 6 districts and 5 Senate races this election. Democrats have long sought to interrupt the 60-year GOP control of the Arizona House of Representatives, and the 2026 campaign will be an expansion of the millions of dollars spent, unsuccessfully, to unseat Republicans in 2024. In 2023, the DLCC announced record-high investments in 2024 races in an effort to flip the legislature, which at the time Republicans controlled by just a single seat in both chambers. Pro-Democratic groups spent more than $10 million backing legislative candidates in the Grand Canyon state, though the efforts weren't successful. Republicans increased their majority in both chambers. But the DLCC remains hopeful, saying that its efforts 2 years ago helped prevent a Republican wave from hitting the state legislature, and it is ready to try again this year. As the cycle has progressed, our data confirms the environment is primed for Democrats to flip the legislature blue and deliver a potential trifecta for the first time in 60 years, Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee President Heather Williams said in a statement to the Arizona Mirror. We're carrying lessons from 2024 into our strategy this year, especially around how critical the first part of the year is for voter contact and establishing strong candidates. That's why we're announcing target races in Arizona earlier than ever, and we'll be present every step of the way to support these campaigns and make history this November. On the heels of recent major wins for Democrats in recent months, the DLCC and other Democratic organizations seem galvanized by a Trump administration that is seeing its approval ratings sink to historic lows. Now Democrats are hoping to parlay that into full control of Arizona government by flipping both the state Senate and House and Governor Katie Hobbs winning re-election. The DLCC would not elaborate on how much it intends to spend, but the organization is planning to raise $50 million for its efforts. Democrats are comparing it to a similar Republican effort, specifically citing the 2010 Republican Project Red Map, which used an influx of money, attack ads, partisan gerrymandering, and mapping software to secure wins for Republican candidates across the country. The favorable political environment taking shape for Democrats is on a scale that only comes once in a generation, similar to what Republicans took advantage of in 2010 with Project Red Map, when they flipped hundreds of seats and fundamentally shifted the country's political trajectory by cementing GOP control in the states, the DLCC's strategy memo states. Arizona is just one of seven battleground states being targeted by the DLCC, along with Alaska, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and New Hampshire. Flipping just 19 seats on this map could establish four new Democratic trifectas in presidential battlegrounds, the memo states. We can also cut the number of GOP supermajorities nearly in half, while at the same time doubling the number of Democratic supermajorities. Across the map, we will be moving 42 chambers along the path to greater Democratic power. In Arizona, the House races being targeted are District 2, District 4, District 9, District 13, District 16, and District 17. On the Senate side, Districts 4, 9, 13, 17, and 23 are being prioritized. And that concludes this story. Dems say AZ is primed to flip blue, plan to pour resources into legislative races. Our second story, it is not a six-year-old's responsibility. Democrats blast GOP school gun safety bill, by Gloria Rebecca Gomez, April 27, 2026. Arizona Republicans want public schools to teach children what to do when they encounter a gun, but they refuse to support laws around safe firearm storage that could prevent that from being a problem in the first place. On Monday, the GOP-controlled Arizona House of Representatives gave preliminary approval to Senate Bill 1424, which would require schools to design curriculum for all K-12 students on firearm safety awareness. The proposal prohibits using an actual gun during instruction and limits discussion topics to accident prevention and, quote, personal safety awareness. But teachers and students would be explicitly forbidden from discussing the morality of possessing a gun, public policies concerning them, or whether a student's family members have responsible firearm storage practices in their homes. Similar Republican-led efforts to force schools to teach courses on gun safety have been pushed since at least 2022 with no success. Critics argue the proposal aimed to give gun culture and the National Rifle Association a foothold in public schools. A core part of the latest iteration outlines what to teach students to do if they come across a gun. Don't touch it. Leave the area. And tell a trusted adult. Those instructions echo the stop, don't touch, run away, tell an adult catchphrase used by Eddie the Eagle, an NRA gun safety mascot. While Republicans on Monday framed the bill as a way to keep kids safe, Democrats unanimously opposed the legislation, saying it unnecessarily burdens teachers and doesn't actually help prevent gun violence. Representative Nancy Gutierrez, a Democrat from Tucson, sought to amend the proposal to include a version of, quote, Christian's law, a gun storage requirement that Democrats have tried to pass for years. The shortened version would require gun owners to take reasonable measures to ensure a minor can't access their gun, and punishes them with a Class 4 felony if a minor causes the death of another person using a firearm that wasn't properly secured. Gutierrez pointed out that firearms have become a leading cause of death among children, and said that concrete steps to prevent that trend from continuing is necessary. Since 2020, firearms have replaced car crashes as the number one cause of death among children 17 and younger in the U.S. The amendment failed when every Republican in the chamber voted to defeat it. Gutierrez lambasted that move and said the proposal unfairly puts the onus of preventing gun violence on children when it should be on adults. You cannot rely on students to fix the gun problem that our adults in this state have had, she said. It is not a six-year-old's responsibility to see a firearm and do what's right with it. Republicans, meanwhile, touted the proposal as a compromise between upholding Second Amendment rights and teaching children how to stay safe. We have to respect the Second Amendment, and we have to train our kids on the importance of respecting the great responsibility and the great danger that comes along with seeing a firearm and not having the requisite skills that go along with that, said Representative Matt Gress, a Republican from Phoenix. The bill has yet to undergo a final vote, but is likely to win approval from the GOP majority. But without bipartisan support and with multiple public education advocacy groups registered as opposed to it, the legislation is likely to earn a veto from Governor Katie Hobbs. And that concludes this story. It is not a six-year-old's responsibility. Democrats blast GOP school gun safety bill. Next up, Mesa can't enforce its own fire codes at an ICE facility where detainees can't even sit down. Federal supremacy laws leave local governments powerless to enforce fire codes or capacity limits at ICE detention facilities. By Jared McDonald Evoy, April 27, 2026. In late January, the Mesa Fire and Medical Department responded to a medical call at a lesser-known U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility, where it found such severe overcrowding that it gave ICE a list of corrections it needed to make. ICE said that the 238 people records show were detained that day at the Arizona Removal Operations Coordination Center, located at the Mesa Gateway Airport, was an aberration because of a measles outbreak at another Arizona facility. The agency promised the number of detainees would be back under the listed maximum capacity of 157 within a week. But the next day, records show the daily population was 646 people. The day after that, it was 526. Within a couple of days, there were 777 people being housed at AROCC, which ICE says is designed to hold people for less than 12 hours. On February 4th, the day ICE had said the overcrowding would be resolved, there were 513 people locked in the facility's detention rooms. 2 months later, three members of Congress who conducted a surprise visit said they saw shocking overcrowding, with the estimated 250 people being detained being housed like sardines and unable to even lay down. And even though the overcrowding far exceeded Mesa's fire codes, there's nothing the city can do about it. The city of Mesa told the Mirror it is aware of concerns about overcrowding at the facility, and said that while the fire department is responding to calls for service and providing, quote, life safety guidance to ICE personnel at the facility, there isn't much the city can do to enforce local rules. While the facility is operated by federal authorities and not subject to local control over its operations or capacity, it is located within our community, Mesa said in a statement to the Mirror. The city has a clear interest in ensuring that all facilities in Mesa operate in a manner that protects health and safety. Still, the city said it remains committed to working cooperatively with ICE and will continue to coordinate as appropriate. we expect that all facilities within our community adhere to applicable safety standards, and we will continue to monitor the situation within the scope of our authority, the city added in its statement. Mesa and the Mesa Fire and Medical Department did not respond to a follow-up question about ICE not meeting the February 4th goal, and if they were aware of the continued overcrowding after they visited the facility. And there's a chart here in the article showing Arizona Removal Operations Coordination Center daily population and showing that there was that sharp increase at the end of January and early February at the facility. One of the Democrats who conducted the surprise inspection of AROCC said the situation highlights the impossible situation facing local communities when ICE opens detention centers in their backyards. If there were any other facility in Mesa, they would have the authority to close it down. Why don't we push on that? U.S. Representative Adelita Grijalva told the Mirror. That facility is small. Inside, it is tiny. There is no way to have 600 people in that space. There was no room for people to breathe. Grijalva, a Tucson Democrat, joined fellow Democrats Yasemin Ansari and Greg Stanton to conduct an unannounced oversight visit of AROCC after reporting by the Mirror showed that ICE had moved detainees prior to a previous congressional oversight visit. The facility has no code violations, and a certificate of occupancy for the building obtained by the Mirror via public records request lists the maximum occupancy as being 203. Even if city officials decided to take action on the overcrowding, it could ultimately be a futile battle. Due to the Supremacy Clause in the U.S. Constitution, local governments have little to no say over what is done at federal facilities. More often than not, things work the other way around, with federal officials initiating oversight of local prisons or jails due to civil rights violations. Local governments can't do the same. For places like AROCC, this means that oversight likely has to be done internally by the Office of the Inspector General or internal DHS units that have all been gutted by the Trump administration. This gets at a real intractable issue that is going to require Congress to step in to make sure that people are being treated safely. Aaron Reichlin Melnick, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council, told the Mirror. Things get even more complicated when private corporations are thrown into the mix. Since Trump's election, private prison company Geo Group, an ICE contractor, has seen its stock price skyrocket. The company is currently looking for, quote, air detention officers based out of Mesa. That being said, local government could make claims about serious fire safety risks and try and seek some form of injunction in court. But those are all going to be uphill battles, Reichlin Melnick said. Locals have been trying just that, though. Last week, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays announced that she is suing over a proposed detention facility in Surprise, following similar moves by local jurisdictions to stop ICE from creating detention centers out of warehouses in their localities. However, those are facilities that don't yet exist, and many of the ways locals are pushing back, for instance with lawsuits or by cutting off access to utilities, either don't apply or will take a considerable amount of time for a facility like AROCC that already exists. The Attorney General is generally aware of the situation at this facility, primarily due to congressional oversight, and finds the report shocking and unacceptable. AG spokesman Richie Taylor told the Mirror in a written statement, "We continue to look into this issue and any related jurisdiction in the AG's office might have, but I will have to decline to comment further." Other state and local agencies reached for comment by the Mirror, such as the Office of the State Fire Marshal, said they do not have jurisdiction over the facility. "I looked into this, and the county has no jurisdiction over this facility, Maricopa County spokesman Jason Berry told the Mirror. We believe it would be within the city of Mesa for planning and zoning issues. Mesa Gateway Airport itself said that it has not been in recent communication with ICE, which has told airport administrators that it would be rare for deportees to spend long periods of time at the facility. The airport also said that it doesn't have legal authority over the facility's use or capacity. At AROCC, those who are staying at the facility are staying for longer periods of time in larger populations. The average length of stay in 2026 is about 36 hours, compared to the same time frame in 2025, when detainees were housed for just about 12 hours on average. In 2025, the average daily population was approximately 21 people for the same time frame. So far in 2026, there have been an average of 274 detainees each day. The Mirror found one individual in the data who stayed for 18 days, coinciding with the time when the population of the facility was near its peak of 777 people. A public records request with the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport Authority for any and all lease agreements with ICE or the U.S. Department of Homeland Security does not reveal any records. That is because ICE subleases this space from a company called Strategic Equity Investors. The company boasts a portfolio of buildings it leases to the federal government, including multiple FBI field offices and a Department of Defense training facility. The company did not respond to repeated requests for comment about the overcrowding and if it had been in communication with city officials or ICE about it. It is inhumane, Grijalva said. We are violating so many laws by doing this, and I don't understand why every city official isn't sitting there and saying, this shouldn't happen. While Grijalva said that action needs to be taken, she recognized that any attempts by Mesa to do anything is likely to take time. That is why she is also planning to do more surprise visits in the future, she said. Grijalva said she was shaken by what she saw at AROCC earlier this month, including upwards of 50 people in rooms meant to hold no more than 24 people. Learning that detention numbers have been higher than they were the day she was there makes her more concerned, she said. When we are looking at the kind of neglect I saw firsthand, that visit, it just shook me foundationally, Grijalva said. It shook me in a way that I don't know if I can clearly articulate. Grijalva says she remembered seeing so many people pushed together that if she asked them to sit down, they wouldn't be able to sit down without sitting on top of each other. And while Grijalva plans to use her congressional oversight powers, Reichland Melnick says AROCC is part of a larger issue. There are not a lot of easy solutions to this problem, he said. That is not a situation the system is built to handle and raises a profound question about what states can do when the federal government itself is being alleged of violating the rights of people in custody. On Monday, the Mirror noted a larger-than-usual aircraft at the facility loading detainees out of the facility. The Eastern Airlines Boeing 777 can hold up to 305 people, although it was unclear how many were aboard the aircraft as it departed for New Hampshire, where there is another ICE detention facility. The larger aircraft is uncommon for ICE. The bulk of the aircrafts used to deport detainees are Boeing 737s, which have a maximum capacity of around 190 passengers. ICE did not respond to questions asking if the 777 was due to reports of overcrowding at the facility. In previous statements, ICE has contended that Grijalva, Stanton, and Ansari are lying about conditions inside, saying that they maintain better detention standards than most U.S. prisons. When asked by the Mirror if they could provide photographic or video evidence from the lawmakers' visit, that showed no overcrowding, ICE did not respond. And that concludes this story. Mesa can't enforce its own fire codes at an ICE facility where detainees can't even sit down. Next, we move on to Election 2026. Arizona's voter database is not the DOJ's to demand, a Trump-appointed judge rules, by Jim Small, April 28, 2026. A federal judge on Tuesday said the Trump administration has no right to Arizona's voter registration database, the latest in a string of losses for the U.S. Department of Justice in its quest to gather voter information in every state. Judge Susan Bronovich dismissed the case with prejudice, meaning the Justice Department cannot refile. Bronovich was appointed to the bench in 2018 by President Donald Trump. In a statement, Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes and Attorney General Chris Mays praised the ruling and said it vindicates their decision to refuse the DOJ's demand for voter data. Our offices will continue to defend the privacy of Arizona voters against federal overreach, they said in a joint statement. In January, the DOJ sued Fontes after he refused several demands to turn over the state's voter database. DOJ first asked Fontes to provide an unredacted electronic copy of Arizona's voter registration rolls in July 2025. The next month, he told the Trump administration that state and federal privacy laws bar him from doing so. The lawsuit alleged that the Civil Rights Act of 1960, which the DOJ describes as imposing a sweeping obligation on election officials to retain and preserve election records, granted then Attorney General Pam Bondi sweeping power to obtain these records. While DOJ framed the request for voter roll information in all 50 states as part of an effort to ensure compliance with federal voting laws, voting rights advocates and other critics said its true aim is creating a national voter database in order to ferret out undocumented immigrants. In March, a DOJ attorney conceded to a court in Rhode Island that voter registration data collected from states, a number have voluntarily given the data to the Trump administration, is being shared with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security so it can scour voter rolls for non-citizens. Trump has repeatedly and falsely claimed that there are tens of millions of undocumented voters, something he attempted to prove during his first term in an effort that failed to produce any evidence. Multiple states have found that non-citizen voting is vanishingly rare and poses no meaningful threat to election integrity. When the Bipartisan Policy Center analyzed data compiled by the Heritage Foundation, an especially conservative think tank, it found only 77 instances of non-citizens voting between 1999 and 2023. And concluded that there is no evidence that non-citizen voting has ever been significant enough to impact an election's outcome. And Arizona voters in 2004 required that everyone provide proof of citizenship when they register to vote. Arizona is the only state with such a law. In her order dismissing the case, Bronovich relied heavily on analysis from a federal judge in Michigan, who similarly dismissed DOJ's attempt to get that state's voter file. Like that judge, Bronovich concluded that Arizona's statewide voter registration list is not a record the state must preserve and produce on AG demand under federal law. That's because the database is created by state election officials, and the requirement in federal law to give DOJ voter records applies only to applications and similar records that voters submit to election officials. And Bronovich also noted that the Trump administration's argument would create an internal conflict in federal election law. One section in the Civil Rights Act creates a criminal penalty for altering documents that must be preserved and turned over to the DOJ. But the National Voter Registration Act and the Help America Vote Act require election officials to regularly update the electronic voter database. Even if the Civil Rights Act includes a category sweeping number of documents, it is not limitless, Branovich wrote. This is the sixth judge to dismiss a DOJ suit seeking voter registration data. Arizona joins California, Massachusetts, Michigan, Oregon, and Rhode Island in prevailing in court. In each instance, federal judges have ruled that the Civil Rights Act election provisions do not apply to statewide voter databases. And that concludes this story. Arizona's voter database is not the DOJ's to demand, a Trump-appointed judge rules. A reminder that you're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. As we begin the second part of our program, we return to immigration. Border Security Expo returns to Phoenix with Trump officials and military-grade tech on display. Acting AG Todd Blanche and outgoing ICE Director Todd Lyons headline the two-day event where defense contractors compete for government contracts. By Jared McDonald Evoy, April 29, 2026. Phoenix will once again host a trade show where Trump administration immigration officials will mingle with military and tech companies bidding for government border contracts. The Border Security Expo at the Phoenix Convention Center, May 5th and 6th, features speeches from immigration enforcement leaders, panel discussions, and an expo floor where vendors will hawk their wares to government officials from around the world. At last year's expo, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Todd Lyons made headlines when the Arizona Mirror reported on comments he made during a panel discussion, in which he said the agency needed to treat deportations like Amazon Prime, but with human beings instead of packages. Lyons, who will be resigning at the end of May, is expected to speak again during a, quote, State of the Border panel on May 5th. The event will feature a number of high-ranking officials from ICE, Customs and Border Patrol, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and the Drug Enforcement Agency. President Donald Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, spoke at last year's expo and is giving the opening keynote again this year. Homan served as the acting director of ICE during Trump's first term. He backed the controversial zero-tolerance policy at the southern border and has been connected to far-right extremist and conspiracy theory groups. Last year also featured then-DHS Secretary Kristi Noem. While her successor, Mark Wayne Mullen, does not appear to be scheduled, other high-profile members of the administration are. Before appearing at the Border Security Expo last year, Noem participated in an ICE raid in Phoenix that included about 100 federal agents. Among the people embedded at the raid was anti-LGBTQ influencer Chaya Rychik. The day after Homan speaks next week, Interim U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche will be giving a keynote address to attendees. A number of high-ranking members of Customs and Border Protection, DEA, and ICE are listed as speaking on a number of panels as well. Cochise County Sheriff Mark Daniels will also speak at the event on a panel to give local perspectives to border issues. The expo will also feature a litany of companies who will be aiming to impress government officials at the event in the hopes of securing a government contract or continuing an existing one. The Mirror examined the list of companies set to be in attendance to highlight some of the key trends as well as noteworthy companies seeking the attention of government officials. Some have ties to Trump and his allies, such as Anduril Industries, which is tied to Trump ally Palantir. Many, if not most, of the vendors at the expo also serve the United States military and militaries overseas. For example, Thales Defense and Security, Inc. is a subsidiary of Thales Group, a French multinational aerospace and defense corporation, and has primarily done work on radio upgrades for the U.S. Army and NATO forces. When it comes to immigration and border enforcement, the company has supplied the systems the United States uses at ports of entry that involve biometric data. Other companies known for their large military contracts, such as BAE Systems, will also be present. One particular military contracting company with a dark past also will have a booth on the expo floor. In November 2024, a jury found that Kachi International shared liability with the U.S. Army for the torture of three Iraqi men at the Abu Ghraib prison in 2004, awarding the men $42 million. The Virginia-based defense contractor has long gotten a number of contracts from the Department of Homeland Security. Another group with ties to Trump and a controversial backstory is Constellis, one of the event sponsors of this year, which is part of the private security company known as Triple Canopy. Its guards were spotted outside various federal agencies that were being taken over last year by billionaire Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. The products that vendors will be displaying on the expo floor range from physical products like cameras and ground sensors to software that can be used to process data obtained by law enforcement. Much of that equipment is also military grade. Groups like Quickset Defense Technologies and COPA SAT make equipment that is marketed not just to federal agencies patrolling the border, but military customers. Other tech is similar, often showcased being used by armed forces in online literature or described with military jargon. Many of the surveillance camera platforms are similar or the same as those used on military aircraft, naval vessels, or ground vehicles. Some firms, like Controp USA, boast about the capabilities of their surveillance platforms for both local law enforcement and military. The militarization of police and border enforcement has long been a point of debate among privacy advocates, with research suggesting that law enforcement that has more access to military-grade equipment are more likely to have violent encounters with the public. Strongwatch will have a presence again at the expo, and it already has some of its tools in the hands of local Arizona law enforcement. The Phoenix Police Department has one of Strongwatch's Freedom on the Move surveillance truck platforms, which are frequently deployed at parades and protests. Akima, which got nearly $1 billion in contracts with the U.S. Space Force, is the expo's top sponsor yet again. The Border Patrol Foundation, whose president in 2018 garnered controversy for defending the use of pepper spray on migrants at the border by saying that a person could put it on nachos and eat it, will have a role in the expo as well. That man, Ron Colburn, is on the advisory board for the expo. And that concludes this story, Border Security Expo Returns to Phoenix with Trump Officials and Military-Grade Tech on Display. Next, we return to law and government. We don't need Democratic votes. Republican budget slashes spending to pay for tax cuts. The GOP plan would slash state spending, conform to Trump's federal tax changes, and tighten Medicaid and SNAP eligibility. By Caitlin Sievers, April 28, 2026. The annual battle over the state budget is heating up again after the Republicans who control the Arizona legislature released their plan to cut taxes and to slash funding for state agencies. As lawmakers took up the bills for the first time on Tuesday during a joint hearing of the Arizona House of Representatives and Arizona Senate Appropriations Committees, Republicans claimed that the tax cuts in their nearly $18 billion budget will benefit ordinary, hardworking Arizonans. But legislative Democrats denounced the GOP plan that they said pays for handouts to billionaires and corporations by cutting safety net programs that are vital to low-income Arizonans. The Republican plan, they said, will force state departments to do more with less. To me, this is the people's budget because we're returning money to the people, House Appropriations Committee Chairman David Livingston said during the hearing. The committee meeting was tense and full of snide comments from members of both parties, including numerous declarations from Livingston that claims from Democrats were nearly, quote, their opinions. Passing a budget by the June 30th deadline is the Arizona legislature's only statutory duty each year. With a split government, Republicans control the legislature, but Democratic Katie Hobbs is the governor, it is an arduous process. The Republican budget would cut 5% across the board from state agencies, excluding the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Corrections, and the Department of Child Safety. It would also bring Arizona's tax code in line with changes made by the federal government via President Donald Trump's, quote, one big beautiful bill. This is the Republican legislators' third try at getting tax conformity passed after Hobbs vetoed their first two attempts. Hobbs released her own $17.7 billion budget proposal in January, which Republicans panned as based on fantasy revenue because it counted on a $760 million reimbursement from the federal government for Arizona's actions in securing the border that the state is not guaranteed to receive. It also relies on the passage of an extension of Prop 123, a vital source of K-12 funding for a decade that expired last year and would have to be approved by the voters in November. Hobbs walked away from budget negotiations more than a month ago after Republicans said that an extension of the $300 million school funding mechanism is off the table this year. 2 weeks ago, Hobbs increased the pressure, saying she would veto all bills that Republicans sent to her unless they publicly released their own budget plan. In a written statement on Tuesday, Hobbs applauded Republicans for releasing their plan and including some of her priorities, like $800 million in middle-class tax cuts and continued funding to lower the cost of child care. But the governor had no lack of complaints about the proposal. Their budget proposal doubles down on reckless and dangerous policies being forced on us by Washington, D.C. politicians, she said. Just like in Washington, they're paying for tax breaks for billionaires, data centers, and special interests by kicking Arizonans off their health care and taking food off their tables. The Republican budget reintroduces numerous proposals from legislation they passed along party lines earlier this year and that Hobbs already vetoed. That includes restrictions on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps, that is already facing deep cuts and administrative burdens due to federal cuts. The budget bill would require SNAP to get its payment error rate below 3%. The Arizona Department of Economic Security is already working to get the error rate below 6% before penalties in Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act kick in. In 2024, Arizona's payment error rate was 8.8%. The national average was 10.9%. SNAP's payment error rate includes over and under payments of benefits, which are mostly due to administrative errors and incorrect application of eligibility rules. Over the past 20 years, no state have sustained error rates under 3%, and Arizona has never had an error rate below 3%. More than 420,000 Arizonans have lost access to SNAP benefits since last July as the state works to comply with federal requirements. I look forward to Republicans joining me back at the negotiating table so we can deliver a budget that protects Arizona from Washington, D.C. policies instead of copying them, Hobbs said in the statement. I will be closely monitoring the situation in the coming days to determine whether the legislative majority is willing to engage in good faith, bipartisan negotiations and have the bill moratorium lifted. Representative Lorena Austin, a Democrat from Mesa, said that Republicans and Democrats could agree on things like middle-class tax cuts and no taxes on tips, but that the Republicans who have controlled the legislature for 60 years should take responsibility for their fiscal policies that have led to the budget crunch. That includes a 2.5% flat tax rate implemented in 2023 that pulled $2 billion from the budget and gave benefits mostly to the wealthy. This budget is not a haircut, Austin said. This is a hack job. Austin added that people have been waiting 40 years for trickle-down economics to trickle down to them, and they're still waiting. This is a corporation's first, Arizonans' last budget, and we're not here for large corporation handouts, they said. We're supposed to be here for Arizonans. Hobbs' budget would eliminate tax exemptions for the data centers that make AI possible to bring in $38.5 million in tax revenue, and it would give the director of the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality the power to place fees on data center water usage. The Republican budget would extend the data center tax exemptions while eliminating tax breaks for solar energy. Representative Jeff Weiniger, a Republican from Chandler, along with other Republicans, repeatedly reminded Democrats that there were fewer than 15 billionaires living in Arizona and that focusing on them was misguided. Livingston argued that the top 10% already pay a large share of the nation's taxes, and he went on to pander to California billionaires. I want you to move your businesses to Arizona, he said. If you're a millionaire or billionaire, instead of 10, I would love to have 20 of you here in Arizona. Please, move here, because we know how much money you do pay in property tax and income tax. We know how much money that you donate to charities in the cities you live in. We want your business here in Arizona. Many representatives from state agencies, along with concerned voters, attended Tuesday's hearing to let legislators know how their budget plan would impact Arizonans. Nurse Christy Korn said that nixing presumptive Medicaid eligibility for patients who can't pay their bills and don't have insurance will hurt hospitals and patients. We have a duty to care, she said. Sick and injured people will show up, regardless of their ability to pay. If Medicaid doesn't pay their bills, the hospital and other patients will pay instead, she said. When a hospital faces budget cuts, what gets cut is quality of care, Korn said. Nurses are seen as an expense, and if a budget needs to be cut, that means I'm expected, as a nurse working on the floor of the hospital, to take care of more patients at a time, to have patients who are sicker, who I'm accountable for, and there's only one of me at a time. And that requires tough decisions, instead of being made here by you people in the comfort of your office chairs and computers, to then be made by me. The Republican budget would kick thousands off of Medicaid and SNAP benefits, but Livingston argued that more frequent eligibility determinations would only impact people who don't qualify for benefits. Senate Majority Leader John Kavanaugh, a Republican from Fountain Hills, agreed. What throws you off is if you're not working, Kavanaugh said. So if you're a hardworking person, you can easily produce proof that you're working, so that working people aren't subsidizing food for people who could work. Democratic Representative Nancy Gutierrez of Tucson pointed out that someone who works multiple jobs might struggle to provide the proper paperwork to prove eligibility. The Arizona Agenda reported that the state is already denying SNAP benefits to people who likely qualify because their system is too difficult to navigate and there aren't enough workers to help people who struggle with it. "We do not believe any new employees are needed," Livingston said, when Democrats asked how agencies should be expected to handle bigger administrative burdens with smaller budgets. Representative Matt Gress, a Republican from Phoenix, the former budget director for Governor Doug Ducey, said that Hobbs had made a grave mistake in walking away from budget talks. Last year, the budgeting process was marked by infighting between Republicans in the House and Senate, but now they're in lockstep after a month of working on their plan without input from Democrats. "We don't need Democratic votes to pass this budget," he said. "I understand that Democrats believe the governor will veto this bill. And then what? We have a unified Republican majority." Gress listed the wins for Republicans in their budget plan, including tax conformity, tax cuts, tax deductions for child care expenses, and full funding for the Division of Developmental Disabilities. "When we talk about affordability, Republicans mean giving the money back to the people," he said. "Affordability for the Democrats is another government program. That's the difference here. We trust people, they trust the government." And that concludes this story. "We don't need Democratic votes. Republican budget slashes spending to pay for tax cuts." And our final story. Why did a Democratic majority board appoint a Freedom Caucus lawmaker as county recorder? The AG is looking into whether David Marshall is even legally able to serve as recorder following a complaint from a former AZGOP attorney. By Sasha Hupka of VoteBeat, April 27, 2026. Supervisors in Navajo County had narrowed their pool to three finalists by the time they met to appoint a new recorder. One, Jose Lerma, was a voter registration coordinator in the recorder's office and familiar with the election side of the job. Another, Suzanne Hudspeth, was a local realtor, experience that could help with the recorder's responsibility to manage public records, including property documents and government information. The final candidate, State Representative David Marshall, seemed perhaps the least likely choice for the Board of Supervisors, on which Democrats hold 3 of 5 seats. State law required them to pick a member of the same political party as former recorder Tim Jordan, a Republican who resigned in January. But Marshall was the most ideological of the three finalists. In the legislature, he was an out and proud member of the ultra-conservative Freedom Caucus. He had supported legislation to ban vote centers, severely restrict mail voting, require ballots cast in local elections to be counted by hand, and more. And he was in the midst of a contentious primary campaign for a seat on the Arizona Corporation Commission. Supervisors conducted their final interviews with the candidates on April 14th in executive session, a type of closed-door meeting that allows policymakers to privately discuss certain sensitive topics. Upon returning to the dais, they scribbled down their votes on small sheets of paper. Then they announced their choice, Marshall. Their decision left many political observers scratching their heads and raised questions about what it means for the rural northern counties elections. Marshall, who did not respond to requests for comment on this story, said in an April 23rd statement that he was committed to ensuring our elections are secure, transparent, and worthy of the confidence of every citizen. The role of county recorder may not carry the same visibility as a legislative seat or a statewide campaign, but its importance cannot be overstated, he said. The integrity of our elections and the protection of property rights form the bedrock of a free and self-governing society. These are not abstract principles. They are the foundation of public trust. It appears that the appointment may have caused a rift between Marshall and some of his closest allies at the state capitol. An attorney closely affiliated with the Freedom Caucus is now raising legal questions about the appointment. Supervisors acknowledge the surprise in interviews with VoteBeat. One Democrat, Donafy Weitzinger, called the situation fairly complicated. Another, Republican Daryl Seymour, when asked why the majority Democratic board had chosen Marshall, said it was a loaded question. Other supervisors did not respond to a request for comment. But Weitzinger and Seymour indicated the choice came down to a combination of qualifications, intra-party politics, and questions asked of the candidates during final interviews in executive session, details they can't disclose under state law. Why did Navajo County supervisors pick Marshall? The board's vote for the new recorder did not fall along neat partisan lines. Weitzinger, along with Republican Jason Whiting and Democrat Fern Benally, voted for Marshall. Democrat Alberto Peschlocki voted for Lerma, and Seymour voted to continue interviewing the candidates. Seymour told VoteBeat that he wanted to continue the process because he still had unanswered questions, but he declined to share more, saying he couldn't reveal anything about conversations had in executive session. Still, he said he was confident that Marshall had a solid understanding of existing state law and the voting process. And we're going to have to leave it there because that's all the time we have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on demand podcasts. Don't forget you can take Sunsounds with you by getting our stream and podcasts on our Sunsounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. You can also hear Sunsounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device. And don't forget to spread the word to your friends and neighbors that anyone who is unable to read print for any reason can find lots of great programming on Sunsounds 24/7. Have them check us out at sunsounds.org. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sunsounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to having you join us again next week. Bye-bye.